Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Mascani, and on the panel this evening, we have Professor Amin Ra, we have Sister Linda Shorter, we have Ernest McBride Jr., and Brother Mashinda. Our guest for this evening is Lenora Strickland, and she's going to talk about this evening, mental health versus mental illness, understanding the difference. And before we get started with the topic, I would like for her to tell us more about herself, what she does, where she practices, and also if it's just local or is it, you know, across the nation and abroad. So welcome, Lenora. Thanks for coming this evening, and you can get started.
All right. Well, my name is Lenora Strickland, and I am a licensed professional counselor. I have been practicing, including internship with LPC Associate for almost 10 years. I have been in the mental health field for years prior to that, working with individuals with mental health illness and mental illness. But also currently I am with a private practice, and also I just recently took a position for Director of Clinical Services at the East Texas Crisis Center here in Tyler, Texas. So that's what I am doing now. So I truly enjoy that. It's rewarding. I've worked years with children who have been abused, whether it's sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, witness to a crime. So this is a change because I'm now working with domestic violence victim and sexual assault.
Can't get my mouse on Vic.
So yeah, that's about me.
Okay, so you just practice locally and not
Texas only, the state of Texas.
Okay. All right.
So I do telehealth at times for people that do not live in the state of Texas. I mean in Tyler, do not live in the city of Tyler. But I'm licensed for the state of Texas only. I am currently working on my licensure for Louisiana. So hoping to get that pretty soon.
Good. Okay. So Brother Machenda's in Louisiana. So
okay.
Yeah. All right. So okay, let's talk about this topic here, because like Linda was saying earlier, a lot of people don't distinguish mental health and mental illness. Mm-hmm. You know. That's a real interesting, you know, topic. So mm-hmm. I would like to really get into what that's about.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So with mental health, it's a state of emotional, psychological, and social well-being, which means it's how we feel, work, and interact with the world. So example of just your mental health. You can have a positive mental health, which means you're happy, resilient, able to manage stress, or you can have a negative mental health, which means you're angry all the time, difficulty handling stress, but that doesn't mean you have a mental illness. A mental illness is a diagnosable condition where you're actually diagnosed and it can affect your thinking and feeling and behaviors. So what I mean by diagnosed is diagnosed with like schizophrenia, bipolar, actual diagnosis of anxiety and depression. So that's what mental illness is. But as far as mental health is almost like physical health. And your physical health is getting enough sleep, having an eating regimen, regular working out. So if you think of physical health, it's almost like mental health, only it's the mind. So does that make sense?
It does. But can you kind of talk a bit more about, you mentioned you could have a positive?
Yeah, you can have positive mental health where you're feeling happy, resilient, able to manage your stress. That's positive mental health. But some people struggle in their mental health where they're angry and sad all the time, sad a lot, or they have difficulty times struggling with stress or dealing with difficult people. But that does not make them have a mental illness. And so we're going to talk more about that, why the confusion. Okay. On the two, because like I said, a person can have mental health issues, be stressed, sad all the time, but that doesn't mean they have a mental illness. That doesn't mean you can say, oh my God, that person has depression, when they're maybe just sad all the time. Yeah, does it make sense? So a lot of times with the confusion, you know, as media, you know, culture, even in casual conversation, there can like just be this misconception. So for instance, like, have you ever heard people say, oh my God, you're so bipolar, or you act bipolar, or people would tell themselves, oh, I'm so OCD. And that's a stigma, because by saying someone is bipolar, you're now saying that they have a mental illness, when that's just a phrase that people use. So people use these phrases, and by using these phrases, they create this stigma, misconception of what mental illness really is. So that causes the confusion. But it also underestimates serious conditions as well, because you may have someone that's have mental health issues, and they may not, people may not realize the severity of the mental illness or the impact on a person's life. So you could be depressed and the person just says, oh, get over it, snap out of it, get over it, when they really have a serious issue. So it's just hard to distinguish between the two.
So now, question about the like, if you're, like you said, if a person is sad on a consistent basis, can that sadness lead to depression?
So one of the things I ask my clients when I'm coming in and I'm actually diagnosing them, doing treatment planning, they'll say, well, I'm just sad. Well, the question is, are you sad for a certain period of time? Because to be clinically diagnosed with depression, you have to be sad for a certain period, probably 6 months, where you have to be sad for a certain period of time. But if it's just a sadness that just comes and go, that's not depression. You're just feeling sad. There's just something that happened in your life and you feel sad. So you're not depressed. And a lot of people have that stigma, because you're sad, that means you're depressed. But that's not what that means. That just means that you're just going through something in that moment and you're just sad. It's not depression. So that's why it's important to talk to a clinician and not take the words of other or believe to yourself, well, I'm sad all the time, so that must mean I'm depressed.
Okay. You want to add more to the difference, or you want us to start, you want to start talking to the panel and want me to ask questions, go around the panel if they have questions?
It's however you want to do it. I was going to talk more about how to reduce the stigma.
Okay, go ahead. You can do that. That'll be good.
Okay. So let me say this as well with mental health. Everybody has to maintain their mental health, whether it's having a diagnosis or not having a diagnosis, you still have to maintain your mental health. And there's preventative cares you can have, like therapies, rest, boundaries, a lifestyle. But just because, you know, mental illness impacts your mental health, which means, I lost my train of thought. So mental illness can impact your mental illness. Impact your mental health. So we talked about mental illness being diagnosable, right? How it affects your thinking, feeling, and your behavior. If you have a mental illness, if you're depressed all the time, if you're anxious all the time, yes, it can affect your mental health, because it's going to affect how you think, feel, and interact with the world. But poor mental health doesn't always equal mental illness. So because you're sad or you're feeling angry doesn't mean necessarily that's going to turn into a mental illness.
So now that's where you should have strategies and coping mechanisms, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah, because I know I often speak with students about that, about, you know, being able to make adjustments and cope.
Yes.
And have some strategies to calm down, or, you know.
Yes.
You're going through something. Yeah, but go ahead.
Yes. One of the things that I want to also bring up, you talk about in diagnosable conditions. A lot of people think, like, for instance, a person with a serious mental illness like schizophrenia, a lot of times they may feel like that person is dangerous or unpredictable, or that they should fear avoid that a person, but that's not always true. A person with schizophrenia, you know, they can manage themselves, of course, with medication, but being schizophrenic doesn't always mean that you're a bad person, or they shouldn't be around that person, or they're dangerous. Have you guys ever seen the movie Split? So it came out like about 5 years ago, but no, a little bit longer, about 6 years ago, and it's about a guy that was diagnosed with, well, they called it back then multiple personality disorder, but it's called a dissociative identity disorder. And when everybody seen that movie, they thought that that was what dissociative identity disorder was. So what it is when you have a host, which is you, but then you have a bunch of alters. So you have a bunch of personalities. Well, this guy had a bunch of personalities. One was killing people. One was doing all the dangerous things. And people get a misconception because when they see that, they think that's what that disorder is when it's not. So it's just that misconception.
Do you want me to start now going to the panel?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, Sister Linda?
Yes, I'm here. I was just listening and absorbing what she was saying. I don't have any questions at this time.
Okay, Brother Ahi?
Yes, Sister, how's everybody this evening?
Good.
I hope we're all sound mentally. Anyway, usually, from my understanding with the people that I've witnessed and in my life and personally, issues to be with maybe claustrophobia or being in crowds or heights or something as extreme as schizophrenia, as you say, bipolar, they're all dealt with by the AMA with like medications. And that makes me ask this question about the difference between mental health being sad and mental illness, maybe even more deeper, profound sadness. The underlying difference between the two, would it be a chemical reaction in oneself? Would maybe even an environmental situation, trauma, create some type of chemical reaction to make it a mental illness in order to require medication?
Yes. And that's the thing with schizophrenia. A lot of people think schizophrenia is a biological thing, but it's not. It could be biological. It could be environmental. I've seen a lot of young people that smoke weed that's laced with something. They end up getting schizophrenia. It could be hereditary. It could be trauma induced. It could be sexual assault, physical assault. So yes, yes. It's not all.
So is that the difference? So is that the difference between mental health?
Yes.
And mental illness would be a chemical reaction.
Yes, in the brain.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right, thanks, Brother Ahi. Okay, Brother Ernest.
Well, I was just trying to relate this kind of to my own situation because I think my wife, you know, has a frontal lobe dementia. And it's been since like December 99, we tried to get it diagnosed, you know, in the neurologist's office, but she kind of got kind of violent and scared the doctor. So we had to leave. And then that was in 99 in December. And then, you know, the pandemic hit about January. So we never did get back over there to really get her fully diagnosed, but I was just wondering, is that kind of related to what you're talking about?
No, that's more of a health issue.
Oh, okay.
There, not more of a mental health, more of a physical health issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, because I'm her full-time caregiver. She's in there. I'm going to probably be popping in and out because she's kind of getting agitated because I'm not here with her. So,
okay.
Okay.
All right. So that's interesting because you say it's physical, but it affects your mentality.
It does. It can affect your mental your mental health.
Yeah.
Yep.
Something. Okay. All right. Thanks. Brother Mashinda?
Yeah, greetings. I just want to welcome the guests tonight. Show my appreciation and love for what you're doing. We need more like you. You know, it's a tall order to be able to manage our own personal lives and our own mental health. You know, some of the things that, from what I understand, that you're saying, from my own experiences and dealing with people, that, you know, to be able to, you know, offer assistance to those who have mental illness. I think that's something very special, you know, in the classrooms that I've taught in, with dealing with adults in particular. I've had students, I recall a student, he shared a lot of personal information with him. I didn't solicit it, but he, you know, we had a, you know, it was part of his, I think by him being able to talk about it, somebody that I guess he trusted me, and I was kind of loyal to him in respect for his confidentiality. And I think he was schizoaffective, and was on some medications and things like that. And he was a very smart student. And one of my gifts is to be able to work with people who might have a variety of different issues, but not really see, might be aware of it, but not look at them as if they had anything. I just treat them like a student, like a regular person. And so it was a pleasure to work with this young man, and he talked to his family about me. You know, I think he looked up to me and so forth, and I respected that. But then he fell off. He got derailed and stopped taking his medication and ended up, you know, with the, you know, the fixed beliefs and the hallucinations and the different things that I guess, and again, I'm not a licensed practitioner or anything like that, but just understanding from, you know, hearing from various people over the years, in particular, he and his family, is, you know, it, due to him not staying on track with his medications, and, you know, it all of a sudden, you know, the world was against him, and, you know, he had, you know, he didn't trust this and didn't trust that. And I was there for the family, you know, the mom and dad, who, and this was an older student. He wasn't 18. He was like, I think he was like probably around 30, you know, at that time. And he was actually living at the house with them. And but they would call me and thank me for, you know, your son that spoke highly of you, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm glad you're in his life, you know, and he's been doing really well with his schoolwork. And so from the home front, they see that he's a willing participant in what he's doing. But when he got off the medication, oh, man, they started catching hell, you know, and then they share that with me. And all I can do is offer, you know, hey, hang in there, and all the other cliches and things like that, but, you know, in my own little personal advice that I can give them. But anyway, the dad calls, you know, the mom died eventually after several years down the road, you know, because they would call me after he got derailed and give me an update just on how he was doing, you know, and I was concerned, and thanks for the update. Well, mom died, but the dad's still around, and, you know, the last I heard that he's on his, you know, he's taking his medicine, and he's in a controlled environment where he's, you know, he's got a job and he's doing well, but very, very bright. You know, I taught some IT classes and things like that, you know. And he was a pretty heavy student. And but anyway, so I can relate it from that point of view, and I have other stories to tell, but you know, we don't have time for that. But like I say, so back to you, my appreciation for you to take on that that task. It's not enough money in the world to pay you to listen to someone or try to make sense out of a situation and to, you know, offer the best advice and the care plans, you know, that you can in order to try to make this person as whole as possible, at least a functioning person in society, you know. So I've had my thoughts of, you know, going back to school and entering that area of, you know, licensed professional counseling, you know, a lot of background in, you know, those areas dealing with folks. And I have a lot of just work experience in dealing with those types. And I'm sure that's what you were saying. You know, you bring to the table a lot of background, but of course, you know better than all of us that unless we're licensed and so forth, you know, we can't prescribe or we can't, you know, when we're diagnosing or whatever, you know, you got to have the credentials to do that, you know, and I respect that, you know. But anyway, I thank you for doing what you do, and I can relate to a lot of things that you do, and, you know, keep up the good work.
Thank you. You know, a lot of people that I see come to me with problems. You know, they're stressed at work. They're struggling in their relationships, but they always want it to be. Say, for instance, like I have someone that's again stressed at work, and they come in and they say, "I have an anxiety disorder." Not necessarily. You know, anxiety disorder is a mental illness. Your anxiety, stress at work is just your mental health. So the things you can do to de-stress at work is maybe take a break often, walk, drink water, make sure you don't miss lunch, kind of like the things that Rashiki was talking about, just simply taking care of yourself. So many people, because their mental health is not that good, they want to be labeled as having a mental illness when that's not always true. Someone that's grieving, they may come to me and say, "I'm grieving, I'm struggling." So that means that I'm depressed. Not necessarily. When you're depressed, that means that it's hard for you to get out of bed in the morning. It's hard for you to take a shower. It's hard for you to interact with people in social settings. You don't want to eat. You don't want to take care of yourself, period. So there is a difference. So I try to get people to understand difference between mental health and mental illness. Health would be a little bit more right now, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have a mental illness. Once you have a mental illness, then we really need to talk. But what people need to understand too, their mental health is poor. You can still come see a therapist. You don't have to wait until you have a mental illness to see a therapist. Come see a therapist if you're struggling. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to turn into a mental illness, but sometimes if you stay depressed all, say sad all the time, it can. So it's always good to come see a therapist, even when you're just struggling in your mental health.
Okay, Brother Machinda, Lenora is working on her license for the state of Louisiana. That's for your information.
Right now.
Okay, Professor Ra?
Yeah. Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. Again, welcome to Norah Strickland. As a counselor, and that's what you have been doing, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what category of counseling do they put you in? There's academic counselors, there's, you know, different type of counselors, you know, for different things. Marriage counselors and things of that nature.
So I don't practice outside of my scope of practice or experience. So I don't deal with bipolar patients because I have not taken specific classes in that area to deal with bipolar. Make sense? And schizophrenia either, because I haven't taken classes to particularly deal with those people. My people are anxiety, depression, borderline, all the personality disorders, eating disorders. It's a whole bunch of them. But yes, you don't practice outside of your scope. So I'm when I get a client that wants to see me, I ask them what are their presenting concerns. If they tell me, hey, I have bipolar, then I'll tell them, you know what, I don't take that, but let me find somebody that can. And I refer them out to someone else.
Now, as a counselor, how do you get your patients? Do they walk in? Are you working with a company that refer them? How do they come in?
I'm on Psychology Today, so they can go there. A lot of it is just people that know me. And they may say, hey, go see her. She's pretty good. You know, I'm known in the community, so a lot of it is that.
So you don't get court referrals?
Huh?
You don't get court referrals?
The only court referrals I get is I am a certified anger management specialist, and I do anger groups. The courts, juvenile, parole board will refer people to me in that, yes. But that's the only court referrals I'll get.
Those would be classes, not in the
Yes, case. Yes. But yeah. It's therapy classes. It's still therapy. It's just in a group setting.
Okay. So, but and do you do, if a person coming to you for counseling, how do you determine if it's from anxiety, depression, just a person just with a tendency to just not have no energy or don't depressed to a certain degree. How do you determine that?
It's self reporting, but I do give assessments. Yes, I do give assessments.
So you don't call them diagnosis; you call them assessments.
Well, I give assessments first, and assessments ask them a list of questions about that particular thing, like anxiety. Do you worry a lot? How often do you worry? How long is this going on? Do you have intrusive thoughts? So it's an assessment. They answer yes and they score a certain percentage. It'll tell me if they're moderately depressed, severely depressed, mildly depressed. And then I base it off of self-reporting too. So, and then I diagnose after that.
You don't write prescriptions?
No.
And what about what about hypnosis?
I don't do hypnosis.
Okay. What about the concept that, you got a new position, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was that again?
Director of Clinical Services.
And so what does that entail? You doing counseling on the job with people who may think they're suffering from sexual harassment?
No. I will still be seeing clients in my private practice. I may see some clients, but I'll be overseeing other therapists.
Okay. Oh, you be overseeing therapists at that phase.
Yeah, and I'll be training new therapists. Like there are people that are interns that want to be therapists. Yes, I'll be supervising them.
And you refer them for certification, or is there a process that they have to go through?
Yeah, they'll have to get their own certification. I just make sure that they're doing what they need to do, following ethical guidelines and making sure they follow the rules and guidelines set forth by the crisis center.
Okay. Now, it's hard to keep patients, with various forms of challenges, personal challenges. Because I think, like you said, you don't deal with the psychiatrists who write prescriptions and deal with mental brain disorders or things of that nature, and the psychologists who deal with, various emotional problems that people have. So most, you had said you deal with trauma, a lot of trauma people. It comes to you that suffered something, they just went through some trauma. Explain that. When you say trauma, what kind of trauma? There's different forms of trauma, you can go through, Is it death? And they traumatized, and a breakup, getting fired from their job, or things. What is the process by which you deal with it?
So, with trauma, it's an event that happens to you that affects your daily life, and it affects your thoughts, your feelings, your behaviors. So because somebody lose someone, a parent, doesn't necessarily mean they're traumatized. Where the trauma comes in is when it starts affecting your life, and you can't go to work. So trauma can be anything. It could be getting caught in a tornado. It could be parents divorcing. Kids are traumatized by that. It could be death or loss. Of course, we know it can be abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect. It could be parents separating. I have kids that move a lot of different schools and they're traumatized by it. And it definitely affects their daily life. What I mean by affects their daily life, they can't focus at school. They can't concentrate. They worry a lot because they don't know if they're going to get up and uprooted to another school. They have behavioral issues. That's where you see the trauma. And in adults, say, if you're an adult and you lose someone in your family, it's hard for you to get back to work. It's hard for you to get out of bed. You're staying home all the time. So, of course, they're probably headed to being depressed because they're isolating themselves. They feel hopeless and helpless because that person's not around. So with trauma, it affects your daily living. That's when we diagnose it as trauma. So with the trauma, there's anxiety in there. There could be the depression. Dissociation, which means where you feel like you're not connected to your body. Everything looks like a dream. It's like nothing's real. Those symptoms. So with trauma, it encompasses all of that, the anxiety and depression and all the things.
So you found some children, but what age bracket? You don't deal with infants and stuff. When I say infants, I'm talking about like 2 years old to six or something like that. What level and how high do you go with children and adults?
Well, just for clarification, normally if it's a 2 year old, say they witnessed a lot of things, a lot of times it's just parenting, teaching the parent skills. And as the kid get older, they may have to come back because the body definitely keeps the score. Even though they're young and they don't remember, their brain does. And they may be triggered by it later and don't realize what they're triggered by. But as far as the age, normally like four. And the youngest I have is six, and the oldest I have is 72.
What about young girls or boys that have been sexually abused?
Yes.
By incest or,
family members?
Family members.
Always somebody there. They know 90% of the time they know their perpetrator.
Yeah. So you deal with them too.
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing is that you, as you say, when you go to Louisiana, you're going to set up a private practice or just a consultancy?
I have not thought about it yet. I just want to get it first, and then either that or I'll do telehealth. So I hadn't decided yet.
So what is the process to get licensed as a trauma counselor, a trauma therapist? Different states have different criteria to meet?
Well, first of all, you just want to get your license, whether it's a LPC, which is mine, is licensed professional counselor, or if you want to get a mental health clinical counselor. It just depends on what type of counseling degree you want. As far as the trauma piece, I took extra training in trauma.
What I'm saying is there a minimum qualification to get into the position, or that a person could just go through the process of getting training?
And you mean for a therapist?
Yeah, for your type of counseling.
Yeah, for my type, you have to have a master's degree. So you got to go to school and get a master's degree.
That's
yeah.
Minimum.
And then you take the state test.
Behavioral science.
Hmm.
In a behavioral science?
No, mine is in clinical psychology.
Well, that's a behavior.
All different types. Yeah, mine is in clinical psych.
Okay. That,
Yeah, and the only reason why I did clinical psych because it focuses more on the brain and it focuses more on medications because I wanted to be more knowledgeable of medications.
Okay. Well, okay, I appreciate what you've done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Professor Rob. So is there any other information you'd like to share with us according to the topic?
You don't just know that you don't have to be mentally ill to go to the therapist. A lot of people come to therapists because they're dealing with work issues. Their boss is driving them crazy and they're afraid they're going to go off on their boss and they need some coping strategies. So it's not always people that come to see a therapist because they have a mental illness. I have a friend of mine the other day that I hadn't seen in a long time. And he looked at me and he said, "So are you still a shrink?" And I said, "A shrink? What is that?" I actually kind of got offended. And I'm like, "What is a shrink? I mean, you know, you're a shrink." I'm like, "No, I'm not a shrink." I say, "Everybody that comes to me doesn't know." Well, I asked him what that meant. He said, "Well, you deal with people that are almost crazy and dealing with personal issues." And I just had to really correct him. And because that's, again, it's a stigma. I'm like, there are a lot of people that I deal with that don't have mental illness. They're just struggling in an area or so. I mean, it's not always that they need a diagnosis or they need medication. It's just something basic that they're struggling with and that we all struggle with in everyday life. It just become unmanageable for them and they just need a little bit of help. But that doesn't mean because they come and see me that they have a diagnosis and they have a serious mental problem. So, but just to know that because somebody's seen a therapist doesn't always mean that they're on medication and they have serious issues.
Yeah, we had a lady on before that's I think she's an LCS something. I forget her title,
Social worker, LCSW.
Yes, exactly. Her name was Miss Beard. And she said everybody should get therapy.
Everybody should have a therapy because we all have problems. I have people coming to see me because they're struggling with their finances. They're spending too much money and they just need help budgeting. People can't find a job and they don't know why they can't find a job and they're scared. And they come to me to learn skills, to be able to get out there. Do we do interview skills? We do resumes. I mean, it's not always a mental illness or a mental health problem. It's not. So.
Okay. I'm going to go to Linda again and see if she have a question now. Linda, can you unmute? Okay,
can you hear me now? I was trying to unmute.
Yes.
Can you hear me
now?
Yes, I can
hear you. Yes.
Okay, good. No, this is interesting. And I think the only question I have to ask is, if a parent has been diagnosed with bipolar, and now can that go into the child if that parent has a child?
It's a 50% chance. It's a chance. Now, if both parents have it, probably so. But there is a chance. Just like schizophrenia, there's a chance.
So it could be hereditary.
But that is biological, yes. If you've seen, and I've seen it to where it skipped generations. So I've seen it to where a grandfather may have it. He has a son. He doesn't have it, but his son has it. And it skips generations. I've seen skip generations before. So it just depends. It's a 50-50 chance, but make sure that I tell people all the time, if bipolar, schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, and this is diagnosable, runs in your family, make sure you mention that to your doctor so that they can monitor that and keep an eye on that because you just never know. So that's why doctors always ask, what is your family history? Because they want to know if you have a family history of any of those things, because that's something they can look out for. And as therapists, we ask too. Like when I do my intake, I'll ask, is there a mental illness in anybody in your family? Anything they'll give. So, and that's important to know if anybody in your family struggles with mental illness.
Okay. I think Brother He had another question. Brother Ahi?
Yes, I have two questions, and because I wasn't really clear when I first asked you the question, does mental illness equate to taking medication? And my second question is a personal question. I don't know if I, the question is this, and I wouldn't be offended if you didn't answer it. What motivated you to do what you do? What was your inspiration?
Okay, let me answer the first one. So for me, if you're schizophrenic and you're bipolar, you definitely need some medication. That's a given. With anxiety and depression, I don't always say you need a med, you need a med. The only way I tell a client they need a med is if it is really, really affecting their daily life. Like if they're depressed and they just absolutely will not get out of bed, no matter what we try, they will not get out of bed. No matter how we come up with a routine, set an alarm, they still won't get up. No matter how I say, go take a, they still won't do it. Go home, take a shower, they still won't do it. Yes, they may need some medication to help them along. But if I have a client that has anxiety or depression and they're doing all the things that we put forth and following the treatment plan, then no. Makes sense? Because I just don't push forward with that unless I see they really, really need it. Some therapists are different, and I'll just suggest it. I'll say, hey, you may need to go to your doctor and talk to your doctor because this really starting to affect your everyday life, and we need to get you going and get you moving so that you can be motivated enough to do these skills. But some people are depressed or anxious, and they get through it pretty good. Now, if you're severely depressed, you're going to need some medication.
So you have plans with your therapy on how to get through it?
Mm-hmm.
Meditation and exercise, is that one of the main remedies in your therapy?
It helps. That's why I start. That's the first thing I start with, coping strategies, especially if you're having those negative thoughts. What are things you can do to keep your mind off those negative things? But also, people don't realize the power of walking and exercising and eating healthy and drinking water. That will really help. People just don't realize how important that is. And then, of course, we go to the other skills, processing feelings and processing those thoughts. But that's the first thing I do is get you stabilized, make sure you're eating, drinking like you're supposed to, exercise, walking if you need to, because that stuff really helps.
So that's going to set the foundation for you getting your mind right and changing your thought pattern.
Yeah. Yes. It's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, the first thing you want to do is make sure you have food, safety, and shelter before you go on anything else up on that ladder. So I just want to make sure they're stable and doing those things first. Because I can't have you coming in here if you're not eating. How are you going to be able to talk about your emotions? Because you're going to be too exhausted. If you're not drinking enough water, you're going to be too exhausted. So yes, just helping them to build that up in their body.
So what about facing your issue head on? And that being traumatizing within itself, being put in the situation that causes the anxiety, and trying to learn and work your way through it, trying to come to terms with you're going to live through it. But do you work with that type of therapy?
It depends. Not really, because that can be re-traumatizing. What we do sometimes will be called gradual exposure, gradually exposing you to this thing that caused you anxiety, but not putting you right in it, gradually exposing you to it. Make sense? So say, for instance, you got a fear of dogs that cause you anxiety. You see a dog, you just go crazy. I'll start with maybe drawing the dog, maybe looking at a cartoon of a dog, maybe looking at a picture, and then maybe looking at a dog from a window far away, then closely getting to the dog. But you don't want to re-traumatize them, because if you can and you push them too far, you can re-traumatize them.
From my understanding, sometimes when dealing with that and you saying gradually putting them in a situation so that they would not be as traumatized, maybe even get used to it.
Yeah, and doing the breathing and all the other stuff along the way to help them learn how to self-regulate, understand how these feelings feel in their body. That's the key to all of that.
And that was my next question about
around it. Huh?
And that was my next question about the physical things that happen.
Yes, yes.
And how to regulate. Very good.
Yes.
Okay, and now my second question.
Life experiences, yes. I have life experiences, I think, that just kind of led me that path, because that was not the path I was going to go. And I would say every path I've taken, like I wanted to be in the medical field, it just didn't work. It wasn't right. I wanted to do computers. It just didn't work. It wasn't right. And then when I finally started working, I first started off with working with teenagers in the juvenile department in Dallas. I worked with them for a while because I lived in Dallas for a few years. And then I started to like that. I started to like mental health. Then I started working with adults in crisis respite. And so it just carried on till finally when I decided to go to grad school, go to get my bachelor's degree. I was still kind of confused on which route I want to go. And then I said, I want to be a therapist. But yeah, and then my childhood, things that happened in my childhood. So yes, life circumstances all played a role in where I'm at today.
And your credentials, where did you get them from?
It's UT Tyler, University of Texas at Tyler.
And that's where you grew up in Texas?
No, Michigan.
Whereabouts?
Saginaw.
Well, that's cool. Saginaw always been cool. Y'all got a good, strong high school athletic program. I'm in Detroit.
Okay, yeah, I went to Saginaw High.
Right, right. Yeah. You and Flint.
No.
You and Flint.
No,
I'm in Saginaw. The good high school athletic program. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thank you. You've been most helpful once you got rolling.
I know,
talking.
I was nervous at first and I lost track. And I was like, then when I get nervous, seeing that's just my mental health. It's not mental illness. And then I kind of got calm and then it started to flow. But I was a little nervous at first and lost track. But yeah, right, once I get going, I'm good. So
you got right with it. Okay, sister. Thank you very much. You were very informative. Thank you.
So I hear you caught that, huh?
You know what I was checking about. I know she had it in there. I know she had it.
I caught it too. And see, I always tell people I try to have something to guide me, but I don't need it. I could just do it, but I try to not go off on a tangent. Well, maybe I need to just start and go off on a tangent and just be versus trying to stay. Because it don't work.
Yeah, stay too structured, huh?
Yeah, and it didn't work. I was trying to stay structured. No, it's
good. I still fumble a lot myself doing this, and we going on 5 years. So you did a great job, and I appreciate it. So anybody else? Any other questions? Ernest, Linda, Machinda, or Professor Rob?
How do we
follow what you're doing? You have a website or anything or a brochure?
I do not. God, I don't.
Have you put out anything in writing?
Not yet. That's a future working.
Okay, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Linda, we're gonna keep in contact with her and all of that, and you know she'll become a team member.
Yes.
We'll recruit her, Linda.
Oh, yeah, please do. Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah. Y'all had some really good questions, though. Y'all had some really good questions.
Yeah, well, you know, Professor Rob's going to go. He's our drill sergeant. He's going.
Yeah, because I have to digest.
Right. Thank you, Professor Rob. Thank you so much.
Sam, because I may have a problem and not realize it, because I always been happy all my life, and then I didn't realize that people have those kind of problems. So,
yeah, you probably practice great mental health, brother.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, because I'll hear somebody's story and I'll listen to them intently, and they'll sit and I think, well, that shouldn't be a big problem, you know. To resolve that, so maybe I'm looking at pink sky, you know, blue skies instead of the clouds and stuff. So
the power of positive thinking is really.
I like that. Yes, that's good. Yeah. Huh?
You know, with him saying that, it made reminded me of something. You know, a lot of people struggle with understanding depression and suicide. And that's a tough one because people think people that kill themselves are selfish. When I feel like if you've never been depressed and you've never been there, you cannot say how it feels. Because if, and you know, I say depression, difference between depression and sadness. Sadness is you're sad for a little bit and it goes away. With depression, the sadness never goes away. So if you can imagine something that you love to do, say fishing, and all of a sudden you don't even like to do it anymore. All the things that you would have loved, you love to do, would kill to do, would miss work to do, would lie to do, you don't want to do anymore. All you want to do is lay around, be sad, because, and it's like you can't control it. No matter how you try to lift yourself up, you can't. And then you go take medication, and the medication doesn't work. Just sitting in that sadness. And I tell people, think of the saddest thing that ever happened to you. Now imagine being that sad every day and can't turn it off. And people are like, oh, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that. That's a suicidal person. It's too much. They cannot deal with that, being in that darkness and not getting out of it and not knowing how to get out of it because they can't. They really can't. Medication, nothing will get them out of that. And they take their lives.
Oh no.
So it's serious. And a lot of people are, you hear a lot of people are dying of suicide. So until a person sat in that darkness and realized what depression is, it's like you can't get out of, like being in a box closed up and you can't get out.
Yeah, I always advocate healthy, thriving environments to prevent those type of situations. And this is one of the reasons why we do what we do, is because we want to help, you know, encourage healthy mindsets. So that's excellent. Yeah, I really appreciate your efforts this evening because it was really good. So
Thank you.
I'm going to ask Professor Ra. Before we go, Professor Rob, do you have anything for next Tuesday? You're on mute.
We're going to have Marvin Maven, who's one of the central leaders in a 12-step program about drug addiction and its effect in the African American community. And he operates a meeting, 12-step meeting at St. Timothy Church in Compton. And he, which I helped him get, they had facilities all over. And the one that they used to be at, the church, for whatever reason, didn't want to be there no more. So he came over to St. Kennedy. But he's been doing this, him and his wife, been doing this for years. They go all over the country, all over the world, dealing with 12-step program as a solution. So I want the guy program to focus on treatment for family members as well as loved ones, as well as people that you may know that may be suffering from cocaine anonymous, cocaine addiction, crack addiction, sometimes they even have food addiction. So anyway, he'll be dealing with our 12-step program, cocaine anonymous. All right.
Okay, thanks a lot. And next Wednesday, we have Brother Chawara coming back, and the topic is thinking, our core energy source. So that should be very interesting.
Come back to that.
Yeah. So, Lenore, you're welcome anytime. You know, we're open to the public, and then also we would love to have you back, you know, in the near future.
Okay.
So I'll be in contact. I appreciate you.
I
I
won't be so
appreciate.
struck. I throw my paper away.
Yeah. So it's all good. So I appreciate everybody coming this evening, and we're going to close now. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Continue to have a great day.
Thank you.